Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Kevin Kane. My bar registration number is 31135. I'm an assistant city attorney with the City and County of Denver, and I represent the appellate and cross appellee of the City and County of Denver on behalf of its Department of Aviation and Denver International Airport. The city's issue on appeal before this court is whether an administrative hearing officer in the underlying administrative action abused his discretion and exceeded his jurisdiction by finding by inference that there had been a presumptive breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing in an on-call construction contract. It's the city's opinion that there's no support in the administrative record for this finding. And as Your Honor mentioned, it's apparent from the court's order of April 2nd that the court recognizes this case has a long and complex and complicated procedural history. With that in mind, and to address the jurisdictional issues that were raised in the April 2nd order, the city will start with the premise that it agrees with the position taken by the court in its April 2nd order. It's the city's position that the only perfected appeal in this case is the city's appeal of the hearing officer's order on remand of September 28, 2011. That's captioned the findings and determination regarding issues remanded by the district court. This was made final by the district court on May 7, 2012. Specifically, as noted before, the city is appealing the administrative body's determination that the city, simply by inaction, breached the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing in an on-call construction contract.
Mr. Kane, if I can interrupt you, then I'm confused by what your argument is. It seemed to me you are arguing on appeal that the district court in the first order was wrong as a matter of law to say that and it shouldn't have never remanded the case in the first place. Are you now withdrawing that argument?
It's a lot more complicated than that, Your Honor, and I've done this by whiteboard to diagram it for myself, and I wish I had one here, so I'll do my best to orally enunciate the way this has come together in my head, particularly after the April 2nd order. A very, very brief procedural history. I know that you all understand it, but this will just help put my argument in context. The hearing officer issued an original order finding a determination on April 15th, 2010. That then went to the manager of aviation for the City and County of Denver on a motion for reconsideration. The manager of aviation affirmed the hearing officer's determination, and the Walker Company, the cross appellant in this case, then filed the original 106 appeal. That's the case that you're referring to that gave rise to the May 7, 2011 order remanding. Once it went back to the hearing officer, without taking additional evidence, the hearing officer issued a second order on September 28, 2011. That's his finding and determination on issues remanded by the district court. Now, at that time, it was the city's position that the May 7, 2011 order, if there was an appeal to be taken, should have been taken earlier. The city filed, as a result, its own 106 complaint, which the court may recognize is a case that's been set also on appeal alongside this case, and it's been assigned to this panel as well.
But you didn't file that one until much later. You didn't file that one until after the district court judge entered the September 28, 2011 order, correct? I don't see any problem.
No, Your Honor. The procedure is very confusing. That 106 appeal was filed by the city after the hearing officer entered his September 28, 2011.
That's what I'm saying. That's when you filed your 106.
Correct. And that 106 was intended to address only the hearing officer's conclusion on remand, reversing his earlier holding that there had been no breach of the implied covenant.
I understand, but I want to take off on what Judge Gabriel asked.
Yes, sir.
I want to go back to the May 6 or 7, whichever day it was, 2011 order of the district court.
Yes,
that's
right.
The one that we are concerned about.
Okay.
Okay. You took the position in response to the motion to amend filed by Walker.
Correct.
That the May 6, 2011 order was a final order.
Correct.
Subject to appeal, and that Walker couldn't amend. It had to file its own brand new 106.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And you lost on that.
That's correct.
Okay. What I'm concerned about is not only whether you were right that it was a final order for purposes of what Walker had to do.
Correct, Your Honor.
And we'll talk to him about that in a minute.
Yes, sir.
But in terms of what the district court did in its May order, that you may not have liked. The district court in its May order said it was granting Walker's petition in part and denying it in part. That's what the district court said. And then it remanded for the hearing officer to do some things on a couple of issues. One of them had to do with Task 7.
Correct.
One of them had to do with the claim that the city breached the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing.
That is correct.
Am I right so far?
You are correct, Your
Honor. Okay. If it's a fair interpretation of what the district court did with respect to the breach of implied duty of good faith, that the district court made a legal conclusion that, contrary to what the hearing officer said earlier, the correct interpretation of the contract under Colorado law is that there was such, as a matter of law, this duty, but he wasn't going to make a factual finding on whether it had been breached. Why wasn't that appealable by you right then and there?
Because at that point, not only did the district court, under Judge Stern, decline to make a factual finding, he also declined to go so far as to make that conclusion of law, and specifically directed that the hearing officer make additional findings of fact and conclusions of law. And I think that the district court Judge Stern intended to make that distinction, because if you look at his remand of Task Order 7, what he asked the court to do in that regard was to review it and make a, quote, redetermination. He did not order the hearing officer to make a redetermination of the good faith and fair dealing issue. He simply instructed him to make additional findings of fact and conclusions of law. Now, the hearing officer may have not done exactly what the district court wanted, because he didn't redetermine the issue of Task 7. He reaffirmed himself. However, once that went back to Judge Stern realized that the hearing officer had given a thorough and complete examination, had applied all of the standards in the Torres case, which was the case identified as the applicable standard, and he affirmed the hearing officer in that regard. It didn't become apparent that the hearing officer believed that he was being directed by the district court to find some other conclusion to his earlier factual finding that there had been no breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing until after the issuance of the hearing officer's September 28th, 2011 order on remand. And it's clear from that, because he makes statements throughout that it doesn't matter what this hearing officer believes or doesn't believe, or whether I agree with the district court. I've been directed to find in the manner of a presumption that there is a breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing.
Well, let me come at this from a little different angle. I'm looking at your brief. Issue one, did the district court err by remanding the issue of good faith and fair dealing to the hearing officer?
Yes.
Is that properly before us now, or was the time to so argue on an appeal from the May 2011 order?
Your Honor, I believe it was to determine whether he should or should not remand, not the decision of whether there was a breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. But the decision to remand, yes, that indeed was appealable in May 7, 2011. And I'll explain to the court why that's in this appeal. Because as you know, you mentioned earlier, I made the same argument, in fact, that this court made in its April 2 order. In fact, I cited one of the exact same cases that this court cited, which is the Southern Lee case, I believe, versus the city of Ed Farner. I'm sorry if I mangled that title. And as you noted earlier, I lost that argument before Judge Hyatt. And he consolidated my 106 appeal with Walker's 106 appeal. So based upon that ruling, in order for the city to protect its right and protect each and every appeal that it had, you're seeing before you my issues on appeal, which not only include the district court's May 7, 2011 ruling, but also specifically addresses the administrative hearing officer's September 28, 2011 ruling, and the two subsequent district court rulings that affirmed an entered final judgment. And I think that there's a distinction that I need to draw there, which is, what are we really appealing? We're appealing, and it's the city's position, the only issue on appeal is the hearing officer's September 28, 2011 ruling on remand. That wasn't something that the city could anticipate or appeal in May 7, 2011, because the hearing officer hadn't reversed himself. He hadn't made an error of law by saying there's such a thing as a presumptive breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, which exists nowhere in the law that I can find in any jurisdiction.
Unless it's a fair interpretation of the district judge's May 6 order that he was ruling as a matter of law that there was an implied covenant of good faith.
May submit that along with that, Your Honor, there would be the implication that the hearing officer understood is that he was supposed to make a different factual determination.
Factual determination on whether there was a breach. No question about that.
That's correct.
Okay, but the question, the legal question about whether there was a duty to begin with, you argued like crazy to begin with. Indeed, it was really the basic argument that as a matter of law, Walker loses on that. There wasn't a duty. And I guess what we're struggling with is when the judge entered its May 6 order, did he say, no, the city's wrong on that. There is a duty as a matter of law. I'm not going to go there on whether there's a breach. I want the district court to review the evidence and decide that issue under the legal standard that I'm articulating. That's what we're struggling with.
Right, and I understand your position, Your Honor. My response to that would be drawing back to the distinction of what was remanded and how. Again, the district court, I believe, stated its position, remanding back to the hearing officer for further findings of fact, part one, and conclusions of law, part two.
Well, I need your help, Mr. Cannon. I'm not seeing where you're getting this. I mean, I think it strikes me, and push back. The district court said, concluded in the May order, that the hearing officer applied the wrong legal standard. The hearing officer had determined as a matter of law that there was no breach of the implied covenant because they didn't have to send Walker anywhere. And the court says, that's wrong. There can well be an implied covenant. Now, that's the right legal standard. Now make findings given the right standard. Isn't that what happened? And that would seem to me the question now is whether the hearing officer's findings are supported by the record. That's the question now before us. Now, if I got that wrong, push back.
No, Your Honor. And with all due respect, sir, it's partially correct. And I absolutely understand where you're coming from, because from the moment that the city filed its original 106 on its own, this has been a difficult issue to parse out in terms of what is procedurally correct here. When did the issue become final and appealable, and what became final and appealable? And again, at the time that the district court remanded back to the hearing officer, what the city could have appealed was simply that it was sent back. Not that the hearing officer would have then, in his later order, made both a factual and legal error in interpreting the district court's remand as there's such a thing as a presumptive breach. That impermissibly shifts the burden back to the city. We're walking into this with the presumption set up by the district court that contract, was it breached? The city has to prove it wasn't.
Well, but the district court never used the word presumptive.
The district court, and that's where we're getting to the appeal of the administrative hearing officer's September 28th ruling. The district court didn't use presumptive. That's correct. And they didn't say there has been a breach.
Well, exactly. But what we're saying is, didn't the district court say, as a matter of law, there's a duty? Okay, there is a duty as a matter of law. Now, you, hearing officer, have got to decide, was there a breach or not?
And I can make a distinction there. There is a duty. And I don't think anyone has questioned it in Colorado.
You did question it.
What I've questioned is whether there is a presumptive breach. And that's the key. That's what the administrative hearing officer decided in his September 28th brief. He didn't look at the issue and decide, did the city breach this duty? What he looked at was, from an implied standard, I believe his words were, I'm examining this under the rubric of there must be a presumptive breach because the city didn't give any additional work and didn't explain why it didn't get any additional work. So what that did was impermissibly shift the burden back to the city to say, we had a contractual right. As Walker has conceded in its brief, the contract does not explicitly give Walker any or all work under the contract. I don't think it's a point of contention that the city doesn't have to assign work. So what it all came back to was on remand, asking the hearing officer to look and find facts and law. The hearing officer made an error of law in concluding that while there are no facts that establish there was a breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, there is a presumption that the city didn't rebut, and therefore there must be a breach.
Thank you, Mr. Kane.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jack Tanner. I'm with Fairfield and Woods. I'm here on behalf of J.A. Walker Company, Inc. Turning to the question, which is clearly the most important one to you.
I apologize for interrupting, but just so as not to hide the ball, what we want to hear from you about is not only the questions that we were asking Mr. Kane, but why is it that the May 6, 2011 order wasn't a final order for purposes of your claims on tasks 8 and 13?
Because, well, it wasn't a final order for any purpose because the remand was specifically to find more facts. And the Colorado Supreme Court and this court has said before, when the remand to an administrative agency is to gather additional facts, that's not a final order, no immediate appeal lies.
Don't those
cites for that.
But don't those cases say, and aren't they all resolved because there are cases where the court did not rule on the merits? Can't you, isn't it a fact here, looking at what the court did, that it ruled on the merits?
Well, as you point out, not on tasks of 8 and 13, and this isn't, I mean, I looked at this and I say, well, this isn't federal bankruptcy court where we appeal one issue at a time. The appeal is of the whole case, and the whole case is over and appealed, but the whole case is not.
But didn't the trial court, didn't the district court in the May 6th order say the Walker's complaint, 106 complaint, is granted in part and denied in part, not just stated?
That's what he said, but this is what else he said. He said, under Rule 106, I can remand if there weren't the right or enough factual findings made. He said at paragraph 24, at 273 of the record, the court remanded specifically for specific factual findings. That's a direct quote on the cardinal change issue.
But what's that? Excuse me, Mr. Turner. Go ahead, finish your sentence. I'm sorry.
At paragraph 52, page 278 of the record, he reminded again, quote, for specific findings of fact regarding the breach of the implied covenant of good faith. So when the court remanded for factual findings, the court is saying, this case isn't over. I don't have all the facts I need. The distinctions in the cases I'm going to cite for the court are Safeway Stores against Trinidad, 497 P2D 1277. That's a Colorado case from this court of 1972. And the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Commission against Continental Airlines case, 143 Colorado 590, 355 Pacific 2nd 83, a Colorado Supreme Court case from 1960. In both those cases, the appellant tried to do basically appeal that May 2011 order. The remand had been for additional factual findings. They tried to take an immediate appeal. This panel dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. And then that then later went up on appeals to the Supreme Court in the anti-discrimination case, and the Supreme Court said the same thing. If the remand to the administrative agency is to gather more facts, the case isn't over. There's no appellate jurisdiction yet.
But the court didn't gather more facts.
Of course it did.
No, it took the same record and factual findings based on a legal standard that the court was now telling them to apply.
That was my question, Mr. Turner. Didn't the court just in the May order said you got Torex wrong, you apply the standard wrong, right. Now apply the correct legal standard and make findings?
That is correct. That's exactly what the court did. And that's what the court has to do. In fact, there's a whole other procedural argument I wasn't brushed up on for this argument, which says that on remand, the administrative agency is not allowed to take additional evidence. It can't reinstall the witnesses. It's just got to make determinations based on the record before it.
Which
law is well established.
Which is what it did.
Correct. That's right. It did exactly the correct thing. So going back to your initial question and your order of last week, under the Continental Airlines case and the Safeway case, because the remand was for additional factual findings, that was not a final order. Appellate jurisdiction did not lie, and that is just smack in the face what the Safeway stores case is. That the appellant tried to appeal immediately from a remand for more factual findings, and this court said, we don't have jurisdiction. The goal in an administrative appeal, the goal of the administrative agency is to make the factual determinations. After that, it's just levels of appeal. If you need more facts, you got to go back to the ALJ. Once you've got all the facts, then it can go up on appeal.
So obviously, just to sum what you're saying, this cuts both ways. Contrary to what we were the point we were making with Mr. King, anything in that May 6, 2011 order, in your view, is now properly before us.
Absolutely, Your Honor, because it wasn't a final order. And in fact, it says on its face it's not a final order. The conclusion of that order tells the ALJ to hurry up because he says, we've got to get this case resolved, and I can't finish my job until you finish your job, make these factual findings, and get it back to me in a hurry. That's what the conclusion of that May 6th order says.
Show me where the district court said, send it back to me.
Well, that may not be an exact quote, Your Honor.
It's clearly not an exact quote.
He didn't say that. I got it right here. Court's order.
He said, hurry up. This case needs resolution.
Right.
Doesn't say bring it back to me.
After he said
fair enough. You're correct, Your Honor. It doesn't say bring it back to me. I think it's implied because he remanded, he resolved some of the claims, and other claims for specific things. He said, I need more facts to resolve these claims.
Well, how do you square that with the conclusion? The sentence before the one you just read said the 106A4 is denied in part and granted in part. And maybe I can just try this by analogy, Mr. Tanner. The court here could have said, I don't have enough facts to make a decision. Therefore, I need more findings for remand. That would be analogous to were we to send a case back on a limited remand, where the case would come back. Distinct from the case where we say, the facts don't support what you did or you applied the wrong legal standard, we reverse. The latter case would be final. You can take it right to the Supreme Court. You can't take a limited remand to the Supreme Court when we say we can't decide. Here the court didn't say I can't decide. The court decided. So you applied the wrong standard. Try again.
I believe it is in fact a limited remand. You may not use that term, but when you look at those two paragraphs I cited, specifically paragraphs 24 and paragraph 52 of that order, he says, I need specific factual findings on these points. That was, in fact, a limited remand. Therefore, immediate appellate jurisdiction didn't lie under Safeway and the Colorado Commission case, and we had to wait until here we are today. If I could have accelerated this process, I promise I would have tried. I don't believe an appeal lied until all the facts were in from the ALJ and the district court issued a final order, which finally happened. Turning briefly to the merits, on the issue of good faith and fair dealing, I don't believe that there was a presumption ordered. What happened was the conduct, it was undisputed, the conduct of the airport changed. And the implication is that that's arbitrary conduct unless there's an explanation. Those are the cases cited in our opening brief at pages 11 through 14. If a government changes its conduct in the middle of a relationship, that's arbitrary by definition. Hey, you were doing this, now you're doing that. Why'd you change? It's not a presumption. It just requires the government to explain why its conduct changed. If it doesn't, it is arbitrary.
But it's not necessarily bad faith. See, I'm having a real hard time with your argument that bad faith isn't the same as lack of good faith.
Oh, absolutely. The arbitrary is exactly that middle point, and there are cases we cite that stand for that proposition. The original order said we have to prove bad faith. What the first read, this May 2011 order said, Judge Stern, I believe, correctly said, is no, we don't have to prove bad faith. We just have to prove lack of good faith. There is the middle ground of, for example, arbitrary conduct. Arbitrary conduct is not bad faith, but multiple cases cited in our brief say arbitrary conduct violates the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing because it is arbitrary. It's not in good faith. And that was why Judge Stern remanded, and that was why on remand, without having to review the record of the facts before it, what did the hearing officer have? He had the DIA's conduct changed, and there was no explanation.
Do you
Walker offered two explanations, neither of which would rise to the level of good faith. DIA offered nothing. So at a minimum, what you've got is arbitrary behavior, and arbitrary behavior violates the covenant of good faith.
Let me stay on the covenant good faith for just a minute. So is it your position that on the, in the May 6, 2011 order, on the covenant of good faith issue, that the district judge made a legal ruling and said, no, the hearing officer got it wrong the first time. There is a covenant, an implied covenant of good faith here, as a matter of law?
Yes, with a little elaboration. What I believe the district court, City of the Court of Appeals, said was the hearing officer applied the wrong standard.
Yes. Yeah.
And so go back and apply, and because you're applying the wrong standard, and it was actually the same thing on the cardinal change issue. It was, because you applied the wrong standard, you didn't make the correct factual findings. Not who would win or who would lose, but, you know, if, for example, if a judge were to say, I find no gross negligence here, but then on appeal you find out, well, the standard isn't gross negligence, it's mere negligence. There's nothing you can do. You got to go back to the trial judge and say, well, was there mere negligence? You applied the wrong standard, so you applied the wrong, so you found the inappropriate facts, not right or wrong as to who wins or loses, but just you didn't tell us all the facts we need to know. And that's what happened here. The Judge Stern said, you held us to a duty of bad faith. There is this neutral category of no faith, arbitrary. You didn't make findings regarding that, so go back and make findings regarding that.
Thank you.
The case relied on by DIA on this issue, the J. Cooper & Associates case, is really supports Walker on this point, I would note. In that case, the government's conduct changed, and what the opinion said is the government then explained why its conduct changed. The government said the contractor's work was poor, the contractor overcharged, the contractor didn't have some special software that was needed. So therefore, the government explained that its behavior was not arbitrary, and its behavior was consistent with the standard of good faith, and the government won. If DIA's position in this case were correct and were applied in that J. Cooper & Associates case, the opinion would have been a lot shorter, because the court would have just said, hey, they don't have to send the contractor work. They stopped sending the contractor work. The government's allowed to do that. They said when the government changes its conduct in the middle of a transaction, they've got to explain why, because otherwise it's arbitrary. And that's exactly right.
Can I ask you, moving on to the cardinal change issue, Mr. Tanner, both parties here seem to agree, everyone seems to agree, Torx controls. I was puzzled, though, when I read Torx. Torx is a surety case. So I'm just, is the law settled?
That I argued so hard below that Torx did not control. I gave up.
Okay.
But if you see my briefs, because I agree with you, Torx is a federal case, and it's a summary judgment issue, and it's I don't think it sets out the controlling standard at all. But if that's the standard we were given, that's the standard that was met. And the analysis of my brief is pretty thorough on that, that there's these multiple factors, and if you actually read the hearing officer's ruling, he spends 8 pages basically on one of the factors saying the same thing again and again and again and flipping it around without applying the actual factors. In this case, on the cardinal change issue, Mr. Anthony Walker testified for 22 pages about all the changes on the job.
But couldn't the court, I mean, with all due respect to Mr. Walker, the court could say, I don't believe it. He has an interest, I respect his view, but I discredit that. You've made that argument a lot.
Right.
22 pages of testimony,
right.
They didn't respond.
Right.
Couldn't the court say, I'm looking at the documents, I don't think this was a cardinal change?
I think if the court had made a finding, and this was the same thing I argued actually to Judge Stern below, if the court had made a finding, the hearing officer, if the hearing officer had made a finding that Mr. Walker's testimony was not credible, then that would be correct. There would be no evidence supporting it. But to the contrary, the hearing officer said Mr. Walker was very credible. So you've got a witness that he says is very credible talking about all the changes caused by the change orders in this case, why it rises to the level of a cardinal change. And that's the only evidence in the record.
But that's a legal conclusion. Mr. Walker could say, he can testify, absolutely, here's all the stuff that changed. But he can't state the conclusion, that's a cardinal change, that's for the hearing officer. And the hearing officer could say, I hear everything Mr. Walker said, I believe everything he said, I don't think it was a cardinal change. Right?
I don't think absent, I think if he says, I credit what Mr. Walker says, then since the burden is only a mere preponderance, and this is the only evidence on that issue, we have to carry the day as a matter of law. Because If he makes a finding that it's not credible, then I would agree with you. But he, to the contrary, said, I find this testimony credible since our burden is mere preponderance. I mean, you may be right, Colonel Chains, is a legal conclusion, maybe it's a mixed fact and law, but the evidence about it took three times as long and cost twice as much, that was the evidence in the record.
But the hearing officer didn't really totally credit Mr. Walker, did he? I mean, for example, he said, I don't see 26 changes here. That's how I view the evidence.
Right. That much he did say, but to me that's a...
It's a factual finding based on the evidence.
But it's a red herring under the Torek standard because the test isn't how many changes. I mean, there was documentary evidence showing they had combined multiple change order requests into one change order. DIA's witnesses admitted they did that. DIA's own evidence showed they had a spreadsheet that said, is there merit to this claim? Yes, 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 yes. And there were 19, I think, on that sheet. So 26 versus 19, I don't think is terribly material.
Actually, there were 9, weren't there? Weren't there 9?
No, it was into the double digits. I'm certain of that. Okay. I'm out of time if there's not other questions. I'm happy to answer all your questions, but my little red light's about to go on.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you to both of you. We appreciate your arguments. We're sorry to have to spring that on you at the last minute, but we want to get this right, and so it was helpful to have you come in and chat with us about it today. That concludes our docket for today, and opinion will issue in due course.